So this slide says what you say is only 11% of what you communicate, and the story of Gandhi I think is very important because he wouldn't tell the boy not to eat sugar until he himself stopped eating sugar, because he didn't feel he had the potency, right? So one of the most important principles as a teacher is not what we say, but the realizations behind what we say. And the realizations come from the practice of what you're going to teach.
Don't close completely.
So I think...
they can see what's
going on. I think... we put a lot of stress on what we say and saying it perfectly. But that's only 11% of what we're communicating. And I think we all have experience when you say something that you realize in your life is very powerful and people get it. And when you don't really practice it, it's like, it's not... powerful. It's not potent. So one of the principles I think that we should always be following is that whatever we're teaching, like if you're teaching the Gita and it's on a regular basis, you're going to be teaching something different. You should be very much aware of what you're teaching that week, and at least that week be practicing it. Because by practicing it, you're going to have realization. And the realization is what's really going to communicate. Otherwise, your words may be good, but you may not be there. Secondly, if you practice it, you have experience. You know by experience you're more involved in the topic. And I just read something today. It said, it doesn't matter what you say to your kids, they're not listening, but they're looking at what you do. So that idea. And what we find in so often in our lives and in our movement in general is that we're challenged to practice a Krishna conscious lifestyle. So it's really easy to talk about things. It's really easy to intellectualize them. It's very difficult to follow them. And following them is going to teach much more. And that we can be a walking contradiction. That our lives could be messed up like anything, and then we're preaching. Right? And we're preaching about how wonderful Krishna consciousness is, and how happy it makes you, and how peaceful it makes you, and how you develop all these good qualities. And we can be a walking contradiction. That's not teaching. So that's an important principle. And we talked about that, right?
Yeah.
Before?
Yeah.
I can share my own realization. And that I think one of the things that empowers me to preach probably more than anything, for whatever worth I am as a preacher, is that most of what I'm sharing with people are things I've realized myself. Yeah. Well, so how do you do this? What does this mean? And it's not intellectual, academic. It's my, at least what I see, what really communicates and what really benefits them the most is what I've understood and applied it in my realization about this and all the insight Krishna's giving me, more than my ability to academically quote Shastra. And I've seen that again and again, particularly when people feel benefited, because I realize that they're in a situation they need to get out of, and if I've gotten out of it myself, then I can say, this is how you do it. Otherwise, I just quote the shloka or the purport, but it doesn't really give that insight of how to, I'm leaving it up to them to figure out what, here, this is how you do it. So I think that's important because you're trying to take people up to a level, a higher level, and how can you take them there if you're not there? It's only for you, it's only theory. Right? So if next week's class is on self-control, this week should be self-controlled. You'll get some realization about what self-control means, the power of it, how it helps you, and so forth. Otherwise, it'll be very academic. And I don't know if you're aware, but in the academic world, there are scholars who are well-versed in Vaishnava philosophy, much more well-versed than we are, philosophically, historically, culturally, but they're not devotees. So it takes a contradiction to the ultimate level. They can talk about rasa, lila. They can quote acharyas and commentaries. They have no idea what they're talking about. Another principle I don't think we talked about last time, which I think is really important for us, is that as teachers, we have to totally be outside of ourselves and fully for the student. And in order to do that, we have to be in the mood or in the practice of praying for them. That I'm speaking and I'm trying to communicate something, but in my heart I'm actually praying for my students while I'm speaking and after I'm speaking. It's like Prabhupada would pray for his disciples. Sometimes he would say, I'm always praying for your advancement, always praying. So that's like a constant meditation of the teacher. It's always, this is my student and I want my student to advance. So I'm always praying. And so that prayer, it helps the student, but it helps you become a better teacher. Because I've seen personally in my life, if I can get in that mood, okay, I am just the servant of the students, Krishna will always bring me to people and put words in my mouth that bring me to people that need something and put words in my mouth that they need to hear. I find that because then I'm more in the mood of instrument. So teaching it's not like my goal is to academically explain everything perfectly, although that might be part of the goal, but it's much more than that. It's more about a relationship in which the teacher earnestly wants the student to advance, and he is His consciousness is just very focused on how will they become Krishna conscious. That's where his mind's at. And that communicates a lot. To the student, and it also helps you. It also relates to the idea of know your audience. Because if your heart is where the student is, then you're going to understand where their mentality is and what they need. And so many of us fail at that. We're trying to communicate information which may not be presented in a relevant way to the audience. Maybe we don't even know the audience. Like one speaker who does corporate programs, before he goes, he talks to some of the workers and he says, what's going on in the company? He knows everything before he goes. He knows all the problems and interactions. So when he goes there, it's like he's working there. He's in tune. So he knows what to speak to. So last time we were talking about this very important principle in that when you're presenting a subject, you have to know what the obstacle is that the people are dealing with. You have to isolate that. That was one of the most important things.
Yeah.
And if you get that, you're already like 80% successful. And we've all heard classes which completely went around the problem. You sit there and it says, no relation to me. It's very boring. Because you're waiting. You know, it's like, let's say you go to a doctor and he's telling you everything the other doctor said who didn't cure you. And you just get bored because you don't want to hear the same thing. You said, this doctor's supposed to be better. He must be able to diagnose. It's not, well, you know, you just need more rest. No, I don't need more rest. I get plenty of rest. That's not the problem. Something is going on. So, and I think we should see it as a service to the students to know exactly what it is their challenge and what we have to deal with it. And I was been talking a lot with Balaram and Leela about how there are many problems that exist in the life of a sadhaka that are not being addressed by teachers because they're just like addressing very philosophical concepts to get information transmitted. But there are problems on certain levels that aren't being addressed, and I think we fail as teachers if that's the only thing we do. It's like, okay, I can tell you what to eat. I can tell you how to exercise. I can tell you what herbs to take. But that may have nothing to do with your particular disease. That's just a general instruction of how to be healthy. But what's actually wrong? Okay, all these instructions are great, and they'll help you. But what about the real problem that people are dealing with? So, and you might say, well, how do I know those problems? Sometimes you just have to ask what's going on. Or how is this shloka or how is this lesson that I have to give going to relate to anything real that's going on right now? Now, what's real? You have to know what's real. You got to know, you know, it's Kali Yuga. What's real? Marriages are bad. People on the verge of divorce. Men are looking at pornography. People can't control their anger. Men are cheating on their wives. All this stuff. You have to be aware that these nice people that are sitting around are being affected by this to one degree or another. Right? So when, I mean, so many things that are affecting us. So we have to be on the page of what's going to help them. Because, you know, I think we've seen a lot of times, you give great class, you give information, but there are problems that people are dealing with. It isn't, and then you find out a few weeks later, this guy just did something horrible. Oh, he's my best student, you know. But we weren't addressing the reality of where he was at and what he needed to hear. Yes? This weekend we did a workshop on marriage. And a workshop on marriage for devotees has elements to it that you will, certain elements that you wouldn't find in a workshop for non-devotees. Why is that? Because devotees' situations are slightly different. And so we had to analyze in terms of paradigms that exist within our philosophy. And so one of the major areas of that teaching is to look at paradigms that are undermining good relationships, that exist or seem to exist within Shastra, but don't, but are misunderstood. And if you don't address that real problem, then you've missed something essential. And so you can have all these good teachings, but you miss that. And that could be the one thing that's undermining everything. And it's true. In most cases, there's one or two things that are undermining. And so all this other information, if it doesn't deal with that, it's just kind of like, it's good stuff, but it didn't hit the problem. So we have to be very aware. And I believe that's one of the weaknesses that we are. That's a strength of a good teacher, and that's a weakness of a bad teacher. You know, they come out of, you know, 6 months of training. There's a whole list of problems that never got solved. But they have a lot of good information. So, so that means the teacher either wasn't aware of the problem, or if he was, he didn't think it was important to address because it wasn't part of what the classes were supposed to be about. But I was talking to Balaram Leela, and I think that as teachers, whatever we're teaching, we need to be very aware of what we're dealing with in terms of what people need, what we need to give them. Like, for example, I do a workshop on forgiveness, and we teach japa. And you think, well, what does japa have to do with forgiveness? But I believe that we should teach japa with everything we do, because it's so important. I'm eternally being Skyped my entire life. So, how?
I can make an offer. Yeah, just right click here. Quit Skype.
Oh, okay.
Sign out or quit Skype.
Okay. Good. Okay. Anyway, I just lost. Oh, there it is. Okay. So, in some of my discussions with Balaram Leela, I was saying, we want to look at what are the most important things people need to learn. Even if it's not directly obvious in what we're teaching, but people need to chant japa. People need some regulation, right? They need to rise early. They need some seva. They need some counseling. There's certain things that if you just give it to people, they'll become Krishna conscious. So my point is, whatever you're teaching, you want to weave that in because you know these are important objectives. Right? Like they say if you're doing an interview on television, you have things you're going to say, and no matter what people ask you, you're always going to say them. And I think if you've ever noticed certain interviews, you can see that people deflect questions and they go, that's a good question, and I'll get back to you in a minute, but I just want to say this.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they want to say. And if you look at Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, he's doing that. He's saying, chant Hare Krishna, surrender to Krishna, everywhere. And if you technically analyze the verse and analyze what the acharyas are saying, they're not saying that. They're analyzing the verse as it is. You know,
yeah.
This is karma yoga. This is what it means. This is, you know, the yoga ladder. And Prabhupada's just going, karma yoga, surrender to Krishna. Jnana yoga, surrender to Krishna. Right? Everything's, for Prabhupada, everything translates into bhakti, in full Krishna consciousness. So I think we should, you know, take that clue from Prabhupada, that he's very focused on what he's giving, and everything that he's teaching kind of gets framed within that context. Okay, this is it. You have to surrender to Krishna. So I think what we're talking about is we're talking about two sides. We're talking about the positive, what we want to give people, and then we're talking about what are the obstacles that they're going to face to give them. Just like you could say, we should all chant Hare Krishna. Okay, that's great. We should. But the fact is, you got three kids and a job. So how do you manage to do that? So if you tell people to chant Hare Krishna, be aware that's easier said than done in that situation. So now we have to talk about the situation. How are you going to be able to do that in that situation? What's required? It may be something practical, and it may be something that internally you have to change. You have to help people change in terms of attitude.
If you don't have order.
There's a saying in the world of seminars and workshops, when you advertise what people want. That's what gets them there, and you teach them what they need. It's just marketing. right? So that's the duty of a teacher, you know? Okay, you want all these things, but what's really important? What's really important is that's what I'm going to teach you. Okay, the verse says so many things, but what's really important, right? And I think that's what Prabhupada did. You know, you do your like total Bhakti Shastra analysis of Bhagavad Gita. You have to use commentaries of other acharyas because it's not exactly like that in Prabhupada's purports. He doesn't do this deep analysis, right? Because he's very focused. We're going to put Krishna in there. We're going to put the Maha Mantra in there. We're going to talk about surrender. So we're clear on what we want to teach. We're clear on our objectives. We want to be clear on what's going to help people the most. And I believe having regular service is extremely important. I believe getting people to chant every day, getting them up in the morning, chant a little bit before they go to work. I think it should always be there. I think Balaram Leela experimented with that. I told him early on in your course, give them the Maha Mantra and then get them to do it. Because it's important. Even ask people, what are your obstacles in doing this? A lot of times in workshops, when I've given people, when I've instructed people or helped people understand what they need to do, then the next question is, what are going to be your obstacles? Because now it gets practical. Okay, I understand what to do, but this is my life. This is my schedule. So you walk out thinking, okay, I gave the class. They know what to do. But a teacher, he looks at it in terms of, did they do it, not did I teach it, right? That's a fundamental principle. Okay, are they doing what I taught? That's what you're interested in, because if they're not, you didn't teach it. You just spoke it, right? So are they getting it? So as a teacher, then you are looking at, okay, students, now this is what we need to do. So what are your personal obstacles? Then they write them down. How are you going to deal with these obstacles? You want to get them in the class to note it. And see, we're always talking theory and philosophy, and we fly over this stuff. And that's a problem. Because you don't know what they're going to do, and you need to help them. So how are we going to get all this into action? Now, practically, what are you dealing with? What are your challenges? Okay, now you have your challenges. Talk to your partner. What are you going to do about it? Go and, okay, we have a group. We're all going to help one another. Have a group of five people. Each person says, this is my challenge. The other four people give advice. You could do this, you could do that. And then you write it all down, and then each person states at the end of the class, okay, this is my challenge, this is what I'm going to do. Then you're getting somewhere. You're hitting, you know, a problem, and they've come up with a solution. That's very important. And those solutions should take them to be able to do the things that you feel are most important for them. Now, sometimes you'll come in and you'll understand the problem right away and you can address it. Sometimes you won't, and you'll have to ask each individual. But generally, if you're a good teacher, you'll understand the problem more or less, because then you can address it in your class. Okay, we're talking, these are the verses on self-discipline. Okay. You know the problems people have, right? Is it easy to get up early in the morning? You know it's not. Do people set their alarms early and not get up? You know. That's what they do. Do you know people don't manage their time well? They stay up late, surfing the internet, watching a movie. You know all these things. That's all part of self-discipline. Time management is self-discipline. So we have to take the philosophy into practical world. Okay, how are we going to deal with this stuff? If you can help people get a little bit of control of their time, they're going to chant more japa in the morning, right? So what's important about a verse on self-control? I believe it's getting people up to chant japa, isn't it? Because if they do that, they're going to make advancements. So if you can use that to help them focus on that, or say, you know, finding time to do seva, right? Because you know if they do seva, that just brings them closer to Krishna. So you have your objectives, you have your problems, you know how to solve problems. You help people solve them, you help them solve them themselves. And you're always praying all week. You're praying for these people. Maybe you're calling them to me. How's it going? That's the teacher. Right? And then the student feels, if the student feels, my teacher is always concerned about me, what does the student do? They feel more obliged, right? My teacher's always asking, did you get up this morning? How did your job go? If I don't get up, he's going to call me tomorrow or the next day. He's going to ask me. He really cares. Because psychologically, people will commit to other people more than they'll commit to themselves. So if you can get them to commit to you or make them feel that they're committed to you by your concern, they'll be more inclined to do it than if they commit to themselves. Did you know that? Commitment to another or to the group. Or you can even be in a class and say, okay, what are we committed to? And each person says, well, I'm committed to chanting four rounds before I go to work. And you say, okay, you've just said that to everybody. Now everybody's heard this. Now we're counting on you because we take that as a commitment. You can create that environment. Okay, what are you going to do? I'm going to chant 16 rounds before work. Okay, everybody hear that? That's his commitment. The next week, we come in and say, okay, what happened? I wasn't able to do it. Why? What was the problem? Present the problem. Okay, everyone, how can we help her? Look at, you know, like that. If you can get somebody chanting every day regularly, that's you're like 90% there, right? Isn't it? Chanting, seva, sangha. Hearing, you're already getting because they're coming to the class. They're coming to the temple. If they're coming to the temple, that's the holy place. So they're getting the five most important items of bhakti by your calling them, caring about them. That's sangha on a regular basis. They're getting the sangha here also. So that's my analysis. You're there with their problems. You're there praying for them. You are such a good teacher that you don't just prepare your class by studying it. You prepare by living what the verse teaches. So when you come in, you've got some realization. You can say, okay, this week the verse was on self-discipline. I didn't eat any sugar this week because I wanted. And this is my realization. I didn't take my afternoon nap this week, or I did something, some austerity that I don't normally do. This is my realization. It's powerful, right? I wanted to see if I could share with you some of the experiences I've been having lately applying these principles. One of the things I've found is that when you're very intentional about what you want to accomplish, you'll organize your courses automatically that will involve directly or indirectly the topics in regards to what you want them to do. So let's say your motive, you have a motive as an aim of your course, with the discovery course or the Bhagavad Gita, whatever, you have some motive. And let's say in this example, it's to get people to do regular service. So naturally, you're going to bring that concept in. It'll just flow in to your discussions. Even if it's not part directly of the verse, you'll naturally figure out how to present it because you're very focused on that. And you'll not only talk about it philosophically, but you'll always talk about it practically, and you'll have some practical plan. It's like, well, who would like to do service? What can you do? What are you good at? What are you good at? Think of how you can connect your talents with Krishna. What would you like to do? And you just try to practically say, okay, look, I think we all need service. And you have a list of things. I already have like 20 things the temple needs. You know, something of that nature. So it's always evolving the way you want it to go. because if it's just solely information to cover, you know, the Bhakti Shastra or whatever is part of that curriculum, if it doesn't fulfill your aims, then it's kind of like your teaching is like defeating what you want to do. It does, it's like you put yourself in the corner. Well, I can't say this because it's not part of the curriculum. And I would say, why is that part? Why did you do that in the curriculum? Why isn't the curriculum fostering what you want to accomplish? I mean, you know, you could have a whole japa session for an hour and a half in one class. There wasn't do japa because we're going to do it because that's the essence. You know, I'm the chanting of the holy names. Okay, that's what we're discussing today then. We're going to chant. Because if you can help people chant better, that's powerful, right? So essence, you know, what's most important, then help them deal with the obstacles to do it. Be aware of the obstacles if you're not, ask them. Always think in every verse and every discussion, what are people dealing with? Let's bring it practically and let's address it as best we can. And if you don't know, just ask, okay, here's the verse. What are you all dealing with? Right?
I was sharing with you today that during the weekend workshop itself, and you were saying that that's one point about the relationship. Because you kept bringing in that point over and over again, that's what is sticking to me and to many others.
Yeah.
So because we are aware of that one
what's
thing.
What's the most important?
What's the most important?
So what I was discussing with Balaram Leela was that usually in anything I teach, I isolate what is what you could call the Paribhasa Sutra, the most essential principle, that if they get this, then everything else I want to teach will be included. But if they don't get that, and I teach the other things, it has no foundation to hold on to. So I always look for that. What is that one thing? And then what I've discovered is that better than teach a million things that don't relate to it, teach a million things that relate to that one thing, because it'll reinforce it, because that is the one thing. It's the most important thing. So, for example, in japa, the biggest obstacle is mechanical chanting, and the solution is to be more prayerful, to be more heart, to come from feeling. So I reorganized my japa workshop where I'd say 80% or 90% of what I teach relates to that one principle. And you might say, well, why do you have to make that principle over and over again? Because a lot of times people don't get it. You have to go over it hour after hour after hour from a different perspective till it starts to become a way of thinking. And then they come out and they go, this really helped me. I really got this point. And you gave them so many ways to practice it. In the marriage workshop, I realized through my study about marriage and so forth that in marriage workshops they teach all kinds of skills, which really amount to nothing if you don't have a good relationship, because you'll never use them. If you don't want to have a good relationship, when you have a good relationship, automatically all the skills come. You just, you know, communicate. You need to communicate. You need to talk. You need to listen, right? If you have a bad relationship, who wants to talk and listen? Right? And they say that when you listen to somebody, the person can't distinguish your listening from your affection. It's the same thing. From their point, you know, you're listening, that's affection. And so if you have affection, you naturally listen. Because it's the same thing. And if you don't, and you can say, okay, you have to listen like that, you just get bored. And you can't do it. So I realized that was such an important principle. So basically everything we taught was about the bottom line in everything you do and say, in every action you take within a marriage, is it helping the relationship or is it degrading it? And if you use that as a parameter, all the other stuff falls in. So that's what we were talking about, how that one principle just kept feeding that principle. You know, well, I have a question, what about this and that? I said, does it help the relationship or does it harm it? But my wife wants me to do this and go shopping and I hate to go shopping. Does it help the relationship or does it harm it? You know, people are like, okay, I think I've got it now. right? But I could say, well, go shopping and pretend you're happy. You know, that's a skill. Pretend you like listening to her when you really don't. No. But if it's about the relationship, then you can do it because you realize this is going to help the relationship, and that's what's important in keeping, that's what makes a marriage work, right? I don't like to go out with my wife and spend all this time. I could be doing service. Does it help the relationship? Yeah, well, it does. If we don't do things together, the relationship gets better. Okay. So we do it together. So now you're doing something that you don't like, but you like it because now you realize it helps the relationship and it's all about the relationship and that's what's important. If you're going to be married, it's about relationship. Otherwise, take sannyas. And since you're not taking sannyas, it's about the relationship. And that's your dharma, to be a good husband, good wife. So then it all makes sense. And they go, okay. And then it'd be like, wow, that was simple. Took me, 16 hours to get that. Right? But I got it. So that's basically, I've got 16 pages of principles, but it all amounts to one thing.
Yeah.
Right? That's the one center. I got 100 slides in my Japa workshop. It's all about don't chant mechanically and chant with feeling. Basically, that's all it is. And when you don't do that, you give information that's all around the universe, but you don't reinforce the main thing. You've lost. You're not going to be as effective. But if your information, so it's like, what's the main? What am I teaching tonight? What's the main point? What's the challenge people have? What's the main point that can help people overcome the difficulty? And how can I just keep feeding it? So when they come out, and someone says, "What was the class about?" I said, "The class about was about you have to chant with feeling. It's just clear." Right? It's just, they've got it. And if they've all got it, you've done your job. And if you do that, you're going to see results. Guaranteed. Money back guaranteed. So, any questions on or comments on this?
Solving all of them?
You're setting yourself up for finding the one thing that's kind of the universal panacea for that problem. At least from my experience, in all the workshops I do, it always comes to something that's kind of, okay, this is at the heart of it. You know? Sometimes it's not obvious. You have to analyze, you have to look at it and say, okay, this is the problem. Now what is the cause of the problem and what is going to be the solution? Like I think I said last time I did a workshop on prayer. So I had just done this training in facilitation and that was one of the big takeaways I got. You have to talk to the conditioning. What is the conditioning meaning? What is preventing them from being successful? I said, okay, it's about prayer. So I started asking devotees. I said, this my workshop on prayer was going to be for Indians. I said, so what do they pray for? And I asked particularly, I see Indians in the temple and they're just like this, very, very somber, almost like a statue. And I wasn't joking. I just said, what is all that about? What's going on? Because I see that so much. I go, well, it's common, so I need to know what it is, because people who are coming to the workshop are doing that. And so their analysis was that they're just in awe and they don't know what to say. They're just kind of like, I'm in front of God and what do I do? And then we obviously know that other people are coming to the temple because they want their material lives to go well in different areas, and they'll pray for good education, good job, wealth, marriage, and so forth. So, okay, we isolated, there's the problem. We know the problem is people are praying to God for material things. And so then I had to go through a process. I go, well, what does it mean if you're praying to God for something material? So it means you don't have faith that He will take care of you. That's one of the things it means. So that became one of the predominating teachings in the workshop. And I told people, write down what you pray for and then evaluate it in terms of faith. It was almost like a turned into a workshop on faith, because why are you asking, and how does this reflect what your fears? If you're praying for this, it means you have a fear of, you're praying for money, you have a fear of lack of money. So why, where is it coming from? And then I said, if you only had a couple of days to live, what would you pray for? And there's a whole new set of prayers. I wasn't praying for anything material. So, you know, I just let them analyze it. You know, I suspected there was something there that was very much fear-based, and I wanted them to discover it. And then maybe they started to, and then they started to realize that my prayers are not based on love, they're based on fear. And bhakti's about love. So we started talking about bhakti and turning it around, you know. So, but I had to, you know, keep asking myself, why do they do this? Where is it coming from? How can they get out of it? What's the motive? What are the fears? And all these things. So that's what I think we need to do as teachers. Just, you know, you look at the problem, where did it come from? What is it? What's at the crux of it? What's the psychology? What's the spiritual deficiency? What's the misunderstanding? What can change that? And then what I did, Krishna revealed to me, and this was really, I think, very powerful for everyone. I was trying to show them that when you pray to God, you need to pray for what's important, you know, not for. I said, look, you want a lot of money, just work your rear end off, get a good education. You don't have to pray. You're going to pray to God and sit on your rear end? No. It's not that God's just going to do anything, you know. You don't really need him for all these things. You just apply yourself, do good in school, be competent in your job, you'll be okay. You know, oh God, give us health, and you know, look how you're eating. Look at your diet when you're praying to God for health. Just eat healthy. Don't bother him. What's important? If you're gonna bother him, what should you bother him about? Right? I mean, don't you think it's kind of strange that you pray for something, but in your life you don't endeavor to do it? You know, pray, oh, you know, my health is not good. Why don't you start drinking carrot juice instead of, you know, vodka or whatever, you know? God, make my health good. You know, just change your diet. Do you really need him? Okay, you know, you have a life-threatening disease, you might pray, but, you know, or get out there and walk every day. Drink more water, you know? Stop eating fried food, you know? But we go there, you know, God give me health, and we're eating junk, and we're not exercising. So I thought that was worth addressing, you know, to kind of, you say, look what you're doing. You know, this is like, goes beyond logic. This is not, doesn't make sense. So then I tried to bring it up and bring it to the point and said, well, what should you pray for? So then I asked them, I said, what do you believe are your major obstacles in connecting with God? What are your major obstacles? People would say pride, desire for wealth, desire to enjoy opposite sex, whatever it was. Extreme independence, I don't listen to anybody. I said, you know, like, write down the really big ones. And I said, write down the ones that if you didn't have those in your life, your path to Krishna consciousness would just be very clear. And be like, you know, nothing really bothering you. So then basically they're isolating the very things that are blocking them from being Krishna conscious. And I said, don't you think you should pray to overcome that? And it was obvious. These are the real problems. So I had to go through my head, you know, this whole process to try to get people from this conditioned response of naturally praying for material things to make it look at it. This is your fear. It's a wrong attitude towards God. These are the important things that are blocking your relationship. And so we kind of spun it around 180 degrees. But I thought about it a lot. I talked to people about it. I came up with a whole, like, and that we did exercises which were almost like personality analysis based on what you're praying for. Like, why are you praying for this? What's wrong with you? What does that reflect in your personality that you would pray? So it's not always obvious, right? But I would say the more you do it, the better you get at it, because your mind starts to think in this way. What's the problem? What's the conditioning? How can I get them out of that? I'll give you another example. And this is interesting because when I taught forgiveness, I only came to certain realizations through teaching it. I didn't come to it just when I was designing the course. And one of the things I came to realize is that resentment is a manifestation of a hard heart. I mean, there's so many ways you can look at resentment, but from the Vaishnava point of view, it's really a manifestation of a hard heart. And that when we can come to a point of looking at another person and in terms of their behavior towards us as a frustration on their part, as a conflict, a dysfunction, some form of suffering on their part, then it dispels our anger and rather brings out our compassion. Oh, he must have had a rough life. Otherwise, why is he trying to tear me down? And so I realized this was actually the essence of it. You know, like you hit something, you go, okay, this is the essence of forgiveness. It's opening the heart, it's compassion, it's softness. So this is where we want to bring people to. And we want to make people... And the other, there were three parts of it. The other, the second part was I wanted to get people away from looking and blaming the person. And I wanted them to understand the person was a catalyst for bringing out the hatred within them. That was one of the biggest transformations because at a certain point in the workshop, the person, what they did is no longer significant. But how you're reacting is what you're focused on. So now the person's out of the picture. So if the person's out of the picture and you're focusing on your own resentment and why it's there, it's a completely different picture. So it was critical to the process. And then the third thing that was critical was the karmic point of view. Like, why was this all arranged? What are you supposed to learn by this? How are you supposed to grow by this? And people would reflect on the situation. And they would see there were so many lessons they weren't learning that were there that come through suffering, and then it would again go back to this person is my teacher, he's a catalyst, I'm learning how resentful I am, and I think I'm a good devotee, but actually I'm resentful. It was a very eye-opening realization to confront that. So just certain things, and my experience is when you get those certain things, and practically it works on everybody, then you know you're going to be successful. These people are going to open their hearts, they're going to let it go, because you've hit, you know, those doors, you just open the door and then it's like, okay, this is going to work. So I found that as a teacher, that's what you want to do. And then you can confidently teach the topic knowing that it works because I've isolated the problem and I've got a good solution. And that's what good teachers do. And that's why people make money doing this, because they can go in and help people because they, you know, A, B, C, D, E. They just got it down. You know, I was just online today and I was looking... I was looking at a marriage workshop done by a Christian organization, and they had a video. And it showed in the video these elaborate workbooks. And it showed all these people doing these, the couples working together doing these exercises. And you could tell they really put time into this. They, you know, it's. I think the main thing they do is teach marriage workshops all over the country. And then they interviewed people, and the people were saying, this was completely life-changing. Every person should do this. This has just opened a new world to me. But that means they got it down. You know, they know exactly what their problems are. They know how to deal with them. They know all the wrong attitudes that people have. They know all the right attitudes you need that can change things. So that's good teaching. And they said 96% of the people who take the course have these major turnarounds. And the other 4% didn't have them because they didn't want to, in my estimation. So that's a good class. That's a good workshop. You know, it works for everybody. So those are my realizations from the field. You know, if you're really honing in on the problem and you're just hitting it again and again. Like this problem that it's coming from within you and the person's just bringing it out. I do many, many parts of my workshop are just on that because it's so important and it's so powerful. And once people get it, the person that hurt them just vanished. or has become a teacher or a helper. See? Now if the person who hurt you is a helper or a teacher, you've pretty much already forgiven them, right? Now you're just working on yourself. So, but that was 8 years in the development. It didn't come when I first developed the workshop. It came also from teaching it and constantly striving, because I want my students to get it. So I'm always thinking, Krishna, give it to me. Give me realization. What can I teach? How can I do it? What can I say? What do they need to hear? So, and you can always make your teaching better, right? So, I just want to reiterate that I think when you're giving courses, I think you all should sit down together and say, okay, this is the course we're giving, but why? Why did we choose to give this course? Was it just something we got from the internet and we put it together and we didn't have to work on it? What do we want to accomplish? And how are these lessons going to accomplish it, and do we need to adjust them to our audience and situation? What exactly do we want to get? Where do we want people to be by the end of this course? What do we want them to be doing? How many rounds do we want them to be chanting? Do we want them to have an altar? Do we want them to be vegetarian or on the way to it? You know, and you might say, no, we can't do that. It's too hard. No, I would say, start with what you want and then determine if it's too hard by discussing, well, how could we do this? And do what I do. You just keep racking your brain. How could we do this? How could we do this? You know? You might think, no, I can't get them to be vegetarian. It's too hard. Don't make that assumption. Make the goal and say, how could I? And let's talk about it. And let's see if we can actually do it. And let's test it. Like a lot of times what I do, just as an example, I just say, one suggestion as I do this with people, I say, what I'd like you to do this week is not eat any meat. And I'd like you to write your realizations of how you feel different in your mind and heart. That's all. I'm not telling you to be a vegetarian the rest of your life. Just 1 week, can we do it? This is strange. And you might even tell them at the beginning of the class, this is, you know, what's going to be involved. We're going to be giving you practices every week of what we're teaching. This is what we want you to do. And we want you to journal. And we want to hear your realizations. Like I told Balaram, he said, do that. Just tell them I want you to chant for a week. Don't tell them I want you to do it for 6 weeks or however long the course is. After they do it for a week, then you can say, if you like this chanting, I encourage you to continue. If they had a good experience, then they'll want to continue. So, okay, now we've done vegetarianism for a week. How does it feel? You feel different, you know, I feel better, this, that, and the next thing, my mind's more clear. They just bounce off that, you know? Okay, maybe I can't get them to do it for the whole time. I did it for a week. I said, we encourage you to continue. Like that. You know? And some people will, right? So, it's just, I was telling Balaram, I said, don't be afraid to go too fast. Think of it more as, more if you say I can't do that, think of it as a lack of your ability as a teacher. Don't necessarily think that they can't do it. You know, you hear these stories of like teams that aren't doing well and then they get this new coach and then they become number one. It's the same people. So you know, you have the right coach, the right atmosphere. So think in terms of, okay, this may be difficult, it may even be impossible, but let's talk about it and let's see if we could actually do it. You know, just go out of the box and think, okay, what if we wanted to do it, how would we do it? Rather than be very, very conservative. I don't think you have to be. I think it's often we're conservative out of the fear we'll ruffle people's feathers, but there's ways of teaching where you won't ruffle feathers, where you'll actually bring out a desire. You know, and they just have to think in those terms. Yes? Like I say, it can take a lot of thinking. It could take years, you know. But once you get it, here's the thing. There's a course I took, and they have a course book written by a person who's a founder of the company. And all the teachers do is go through the course book, and the course book has exercises. And they understand the results you're supposed to get from the exercise. So when you do the exercise, you write what's called a debrief, which is your realization. And the teachers know what you're supposed to realize, And if you don't realize it, they talk to you and say, I think you did the exercise wrong. And so the teacher explains the exercise and the teacher reads the debrief, and if you didn't get it right, they talk to you. And the course is designed to produce a particular result. And everyone who takes the course will get the right result as long as the teacher clearly explains the exercise and can read the debrief well enough to know whether or not they understood the exercise. That's it. So let's say through the years of your teaching, you get to the point and say, you know, I tried this. Everybody, you know, 80% of the people at the end of my course became vegetarian, or 60% did it the first week. And, you know, you have your idea, you all come together and you go, well, this looks like it really works. So this is now the standard. Okay, this is how we got them into Japa. You know, we realized the third week they're ready for Japa, but you have to teach this, and this yeah. before. So in our mind, we're thinking, I want them to chant Japa. So everything I'm teaching the first 2 weeks is really just preparing for that, because I need 3 weeks to prepare for it. But by that preparation, I got them. So then it becomes a science. This concept of debriefing is also interesting, where you get them to write your what did you understand, what did you get, what was your realization. It helps them, and it helps you as a teacher to know. And then the idea of giving an assignment for, okay, this week, this is our assignment, this is what we do. You know, I want you to set up an altar, and I want you to offer one stick of incense and a flower every day, and your dinner meal, put it on and say Hare Krishna. And then write your realization. If you get any, write it. What was going on for you in your mind and your heart while you did that? And then they get to reflect. And if something's actually going on and they write it down, they realize this was a powerful practice. You know? Or you know, one week you talk about hearing. So your assignment this week is get your family together and read 5 verses of the Gita and 5 purports. And just know changes in the family from doing that, changes in you, like, and so forth. Simple stuff, right? Very simple. But it can be very powerful. That could, you know, for the family might say, well, you know, we always get around and watch television. This week we didn't watch television. We noticed a big difference. This was much different. You know, reading the Bhagavad Gita together, which they would never do unless you tell them. And what I would do, I would spend like the first lesson explaining how the course is going to work and how we're going to give you these assignments and why they really help. And I would read testimonials. I'd just get them all motivated, because otherwise you tell them all this, they might think, it's too hard for me. But you show them that hundreds of people have done this. This is what they've said about it. These are their realizations. And you can do that also when you give the assignment. You say, okay, now we're going to do Japa, but I just, you know, want to let you know these are the testimonials we got from our previous courses of people who did this. So then they get excited. Rather than thinking, I can't do this, they're excited. So it's all about you and your intention and how do you achieve it, right? It's a little bit of a marketing model, but preaching is marketing because you're selling Krishna. But my hope is that if you do these things amongst yourself and you get it down, you're saying, you know, you get things that really work successfully, then you just standardize them. You go, this is this lesson, this is this lesson. This one should, and then you discuss. No, I think this one should come before this because this will prepare them better to do this. And you keep modifying till you're satisfied that, okay, we've got the course, it produces the desired result. And then you're happy. Another discussion we have at Balaram Leela, which is interesting, and I'm just throwing this out as a means for you to think, but he said after your self-discovery course, you went into the Bhagavad Gita. And I said, why would you do that? Because people have so many problems that you need to address. And if you want to bring them into the community, I think you need courses, which I call first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious courses. You know, like relationship courses, you know, the real nitty-gritty stuff, you know, that people deal with, you know. Could be forgiveness, could be marriage, could be relationship cooperation, stuff that people need, parenting, like that. It's not that they shouldn't take the Bhagavad Gita, but I thought it was like, wow, you just jump from an introductory to a six-month.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get a lot of that stuff unless you put that, unless you make that part of your Gita course. You know, but you have to think, okay, what would you like every member of the congregation to know, to be able to do when you start, you know, or areas of their life that need improvement? And so I think that would be tremendously beneficial for us as a community and for the individuals, because they're getting skills here that are really going to help them improve in their life. So that's just something I threw out in terms of your strategy. Like, think it out more than just say, well, this is what we do. Or you can say, all right, we want to teach the Bhagavad Gita, but part of their commitment is, what is it, 6 month course? 1 year?
How
about 3 years?
2 years.
Okay. Say it's a 3 or 4 year. But you could say part of your commitment to get your bhakti shastra and all this is you're gonna take 2 weekend workshops a year, and we're gonna give you the date so you can plan 4 or 6 months in advance. And then you do your marriage, you do your cooperation, you do whatever it is you want to do, and then you'll fit that in.
Yeah.
So it's so at least when they graduate, you know, okay,
yeah,
they've got these things. That's another way of doing it. But I'm just saying, we shouldn't go along with the flow, but we should be very clear about what people need to learn that will help them and will help us as a community. Because when I see people join a community, I see it like them joining a company. And you know, when you join a company, there's a culture, and they have to be indoctrinated into that culture. And then they operate on the same wavelength as everybody else. Right? And I think we want to create a culture and indoctrinate, so to speak, people into it. And it's through education. I mean, how much training do people go through when they join companies? Right? You go to Walmart, you ask them, where's this? Do they walk you there? That's the new paradigm in so many stores. They don't say it's over there. They walk you there. They got trained. They didn't train them. They just say it's over there. They're not going to walk you there. It's a culture. I went to a church. Four people asked me after the service if I signed a guest book. They were all trained to ask them. 4 people. Hi, how's it going? My name's so-and-so. Did you sign our guest book yet? That evening, I went there, it was probably like a 10 o'clock ceremony. That evening at 6 o'clock, I got a phone call. How did you like it? All thought out. Really well thought out. So, is the iPhone well thought out?
It's very well thought out.
Are we well thinking out everything we're doing? Think it out. Just think it. That's all I'm saying. Just think it out more. What do you want to accomplish? And use your education to accomplish it. Another thing that I think is very valuable is offering yourself, if you have time, or perhaps some devotees who have more time, offering yourself as mentors, where you do more one-on-one work with people. Because that one-on-one work can really bring them in. You know, I mean, you can offer it in terms of philosophical, you know, if they just want to have discussion, or in terms of problem solving. But you imagine if all of you teachers, you know, you have your students, but beyond that, you've had so many students, or even people who haven't taken your course. But imagine you had 30, 40 people, you were mentoring 50 people times 10 of you or 20 of you, you know. And then as we get more teachers, more, you know, those people are going to become very Krishna conscious very easily, because they're getting a lot of attention. So just offering it and seeing what happens, just being available. I did a workshop in Mexico, 17 people, we offered mentorship and 4 people signed up, because people have problems. It's almost 25% of the people. That's amazing. I was bringing up a lot of stuff for them. Like, the nature of the workshop brought up a lot of issues. and they wanted to go further with it. So, and then if people have issues with family, with children, with this and that, then you realize, okay, we're gonna need a workshop on parenting because everybody's coming to us with this problem. We were just speaking today with a man, with one of the devotees about parenting issues, and he didn't know what to do. He was up against the wall, and the problem was his own parenting style that he got from his father, which was very autocratic and disciplinary. And it wasn't working, and it's really not so much in line with our bhakti profile, you know? So if that's a common problem, we should help people with it. Then I think your bhakti shastri would be quite powerful. Anyway, so that's my thought on that. Do you have any questions? What time are we supposed to end? 9?
I said 9.
Yeah. You're compassionate, you're thinking of them, you're always thinking how to better teach. Teaching isn't always speaking. It's getting a result. Yes, you have?
No, I was thinking that so many points that you're saying, maybe I have a couple of days, one idea could be that we could actually discuss this among ourselves and come up with some thoughts.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Here and see what we can do.
I think that would be good. I think. I was thinking.
What happens if we don't get the chance to discuss? We just one-on-one we discuss it here. It could be an opportunity.
Yeah,
you're giving
the
principles, and we could see what practically is possible.
Focus on
right.
what
is the goal of the discovery of self course?
Yeah.
What is the goal of the Bhakti Gita?
Yeah,
see what
exactly.
Few things we can do.
And how you achieve those goals.
Some things we can. So by the end of Wednesday, we could actually come up with some
refine.
On what is, carve out. Okay, this is the current thing which we have. Some of the things you're telling us. What can we do? At the end of the day, some things if we can apply.
Yeah.
That is the best.
Or you want to say something?
No, yeah, I mean, one of the things that you said was real nice was that how to keep them engaged, because, I'm working at a healthcare organization, and they have this survey that they make people take, which is a health risk appraisal. And what they found out is, people take that survey, and they just, they find out that, okay, they're at the risk of whatever, heart disease or obesity or whatever, but at the end of the day, once they're done with the survey, they print out the results, they take it home, and after a week or two, they're like, it's
forget
nothing.
It,
it's just, paper in a shelf.
Yeah.
But what they found is, if you, as you were saying, if they, that group commitment, so if they make them go to a site where they have some goal, losing weight, how they're doing against others who are also in the same boat, then it seemed like they were really acting on it. I mean, so same thing with japa or something like that, where say, okay, you did how many, you did one round, two rounds,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how much.
What I'm seeing is let's say in your example, we did a course on, we did a session on seva, and then we asked people, what seva do you like to do? And then we figured out how to somehow engage them. So we called them, or we worked it out so they'd be engaged. But whenever they got engaged and did the seva, then they would come back to the group and say, what seva did you do? How did it go? Are you going to continue? Like that. But you could do that every week if you got it going. What seva did you do this week? How did it go? You could do that with vegetarian, Did you make it another week? Could do that with japa. Did you, how many rounds did you do? You said you're going to do 4, I only did 2. You committed to the group. What's going on? We need to help you. So it just keeps going. Man, you're going 3 years like that. Wow. And, they'll all be devotees if they stick it out that long.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was saying in the beginning, you have to really get them inspired about the paradigm, because then they might feel like this is like a lot of pressure, you're demanding all this, but if you present in the beginning how this, you know, it works really well this way, and it's a very supportive, we're supporting you in your progress, and these are the testimonials, and we're very excited about it, and so forth. And you keep that mood week after week, you know, it's like, wow, you did four rounds again, that's fantastic. How do you feel? I feel really good. Oh, I'm so happy. Great, you know. So then she's feeling good from the support, and so she'll keep going. We know it's hard for people, right? So we have to do everything we can. Coming together, mentoring, calling them, how's it going? Write your realization, send it to our Facebook page for this, you know, so we can share it with the other students. Whatever. Just whatever works. So I'd be happy to, you know, to do a little brainstorming.
Yeah.
With the hopes of coming up with a, you know, systematic approach and better ways of achieving our goals.
Yeah.
And defining the goals also.
Yeah, defining the goals. Something practical for us to do.
I don't know if I told you last time. This is very interesting. Maybe I did. And it's worth reminding you. The company that I did my training with, what they did was we did a 4.5 day training. It was very expensive, but in reciprocation for the money we spent, they basically just opened up their company and showed us how their company functioned. And so one of the things they told us is that they have a free weekend workshop, and they get from 1,000 to 4,000 people to come. And the reason, the sole reason they have that workshop is to market 5 or 6 other workshops they have. And so what they do is periodically throughout the weekend, they'll stop and say, can I tell you about this workshop? And they've already told you that they have it, because they refer to it when they were doing something. And they say, well, if you like this topic, this is what we discussed in this workshop. And so all throughout, you already know, you've heard something about it. And this is all completely planned out. And so what happened was, when they started developing more workshops, if they only had a free weekend workshop, it was becoming like every 2 or 3 hours they were introducing a new workshop. So they made the weekend workshop all day Friday, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday, solely for the purpose of being able to not crowd their marketing of the workshops, because they needed to market 6, so then that was 2 a day. Instead of 3 a day was too much. That's the only reason they added another day. And all the expense of renting the hotel and everything. So strategy. Very definite strategy. We need 3 days. We're gonna, and they told us that when you talk about these workshops, you have to do it after you've done something where everybody's very excited, like an exercise or something. Everyone's, wow, that was great, and then you talk about it. It's all, you know, everything is thought out exactly. So I just wanted to share that with you, just to show how these teachers are very systematic and strategic about what they're doing and about the results they get. Just as you would be in a business. It's very business-like. So what do we do now? Talk theory or talk practice? Or questions?
This is more about strategy and all, but my question is about my personal problem. I just started teaching.
Yes.
But sometimes my ego gets in. Like, I have favorite students, and so, like, you know, those kinds of problems are coming up. So how do I deal with that? How can I just give a Prabhupada message and not, not adding things, but it's just that my ego is coming in.
Ego in the sense of your... showing more affection to some students who
that,
are more.
That is one part of it, but some of
the other one is showing off or something.
Not
impressing, trying to impress, or.
No, it's just that they're more accepting the message.
Oh, so you're more inclined to.
Yeah. So those things, I don't want to.
Well, I think it's a good point. There's a couple things I could say. As teachers, if somebody's not getting it from us, then one thing we could think is, what's wrong with me, instead of what's wrong with them. In other words, are these, am I not inspiring or enlivening enough or interesting enough, or am I not relating to them just from my speaking? Maybe I need to do other things. Maybe I need to do skits. Maybe I need to do other approaches. So that's one way of looking at it. The, what's related to that is that you as a teacher, your only objective is that all your students get the message. And that's, that has to be your meditation before you teach. But that's why you're doing it. So, you know, before you teach, go into that consciousness that, you know, I'm representing Prabhupada, my spiritual master. This is the goal. This is what I'm trying to accomplish today in this class. I'm praying to be an instrument like that. Go into the right consciousness. Like we were saying the other night, when you chant japa, don't just chant, but prepare your consciousness. That's why we offer prayers before, you know, before we speak, because we're going to that consciousness of mukham karoti vachanam, please put, make me a poet. Put words in my mouth that are necessary, essential for people, and enlighten me in how to best do that. Teacher is a servant. That's the mood. Yes.
It's the same point that Mahaprabhu said for you. Sometimes I can, the initial basic courses like DYS, Discourse, probably they are deemed to be the most toughest ones because the people coming, the audience are like
newest.
Completely, you know,
yeah.
And you have to go through that course like I'm kind of a secondary teacher in one of the classes, like Prabhuji was a primary teacher. So, some of the feedback that we got was, hey, we thought that we're coming to this class to learn about love and prayers, but it's so scientific. It's so, you know, you give us so much scientific examples. And then sometimes, there's a one particular couple who come to the class, they, and specifically the husband, they are very much kind of, we land up into a more kind of a debative session in the class rather than a collaborative session. You know, it's like sometimes even like head on, you know. Like, so I think the real question comes really what Mataji was saying. I mean, it's not necessarily an ego. Probably it is more like you are trying to do, or let's say you are trying to also learn on the way, but also trying to give the same message. But
I think what you said is very revealing. Because to me, it indicates the whole modality and approach of the course may not be actually geared. I think it was, those courses were initially geared for IT students, as far as I understand, you know, and written by someone who is of that scientific intellectual, more than the bhakti side of it, and found that to work. At least it seemed to work. And so you need to look at that paradigm and say, that may not be the paradigm that we want to use because it may not achieve the goals we want, and that may not be what people are looking for, like you say. And so that feedback is very good. I wonder if other people feel that way. My feeling, as a general principle, is we don't need to get into debate over philosophical ideas, because you want to win people's hearts. And if you have, well, how long, how many weeks is the self-discovery? 6, 8 weeks?
8 weeks.
So you have 8 weeks to win somebody's heart. You don't have to. You don't have to go so quick, and if you build their trust, then it's easier to convince them. But my question would be, how much of that debate, scientific, intellectual approach is necessary for these people, for what they're looking for and what we want to achieve? So you've kind of adopted an existing paradigm, which may not be ideal for us. And that's something, glad you brought it up, because that's something we would have to look at when we sort of talk tomorrow. We can look at that. And all of you can throw out your ideas of, how do you feel about it? Say, no, I feel it's good, because I see once people got it, then it built their faith. Or say, no, I have a hard time with that. I think I could get more mileage if I bypassed that for the first 5 classes and did something more practical. Got them involved. Maybe what they're looking for is practice. They want to learn how to chant, how to do puja, how to do seva, how to help their kids. I think we can assume with Indians, they're all concerned about their kids being more spiritual. So I think it's not smart to avoid that. And as we know, what I would suggest is that if we know they're very concerned about their kids, you can use that to bring them, because you can say, okay, this is what you do with your kids, but the most important thing is your kids are looking at you. So you can't teach this unless you do it. So then you get them to start practicing, motivated by doing it for their kids. And they may not, maybe they wouldn't do it for themselves as easily or at all, but for their kids they'll do it. So you could use that as a, say, well.
Actually, in a way we did in the last class, the husband, he asked the question. So if you say all this, we were reading through, because there are some verses also in the course, like in the device course, there are some verses. So he says, if this is the case, then why does Krishna reveal slowly through this process? Why doesn't he tell everything in the first place, that this is what it is,
mm-hmm.
and then we can follow? That was his question, that why do we have to follow this process? Why not be Krishna is upfront and tell us that this is how we do it? Alright. So we answered that question in a way, saying that, so if you have a son or a daughter, if they're small, you tell them everything. Do you think their mind is mature enough to follow through and learn what you want them to learn? Or would you rather have them go through a process of learning and then eventually discover some aspects of practical life themselves? So in a way we kind of connected with that.
What's interesting, you may want to think about, like in the course I did, it's so well laid out that it just presents ideas and exercises, ideas and exercises, ideas. It's always exercises with it. So you probably wouldn't even get into that polemic doing it that way. It was just, it's like, here's a process and they can see the benefit. And it's not dealing so much with solely here, but it's dealing with practice, it's dealing with transformation, and it's really well worked out in the workbook. And you just go through the workbook, and you're doing a lot of writing, reflecting, which is very important. Reflecting on your life, Your kids ask you what the goal of life is. What do you say? Are you sure that's true? Little things to get people thinking. If you're not sure, how does that make you feel? So they're just reflecting. There's no debate. There's no philosophy. That can come later.
Yeah.
You're just bringing them along, and you say, okay, by the 6th class, we've got them here. Now let's talk about this other stuff. What's your understanding of karma? Do you think everything's destined? You're talking. Okay, let's look at it. Discussion. That's the way these professional seminars do. They pull them along. And as you're getting pulled along, they're more accepting. Because they're benefiting and they're trusting because they're benefiting. And at a certain point, whatever you say, they'll accept. That's what I've seen. But you also remember what I said last time, is that if you, when you begin, you set the stage, you set the ground rules. Okay, you don't have to believe all this, but we do need you to be open to it, to at least accept it theoretically, and we do need your participation. So you set this environment, and any kind of polemic comes up, you remind them, you say, you remember, we're just conceptualizing this. You know. Whether you accept it or not is nothing, but at least for the next 8 weeks, we need you to be open so that you can test these ideas. And if you close, then you're not going to get them. And I think if we're better teachers, we can present them in ways that challenge them to more of a self-discovery approach. And because Prabhupada's point was, if you don't accept this, what are your alternatives? So sometimes as a teacher, you can say, okay, they may challenge you. And you'll say, okay, what's the consequence of your philosophy? Where will it take you? Are you certain it's true? And just throw little things out there. What's the consequence of this? Very good question. When there's somebody brings a point and it's not in line with what we're teaching, you say, are you absolutely certain this is true? The answer will always be no. Unless they're, you know, unless they're just like to argue. You're absolutely sure this is true. It's your idea. You know, so they already have scripture. I think they need to be very... I think if your heart is there with people, you'll always know what to say to bring them around. You'll always be able to pull them, because that's what you want. If your ego's there, you'll argue. Because then you'll want to...
It's hard being there in such a kind of a connection, or the mood of a servant.
And also I would say, if people are arguing with you, that's an indication that maybe your heart's not there.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the way you're presenting it is causing them to feel challenged.
Yeah.
You see, the psychology is if you cause a person to feel challenged, they want to defend themselves. And so then they'll try to prove you wrong. And so you don't want to create that environment. You want to create the environment where they feel free to share. And even if they share something wrong, you say, well, that's interesting. You know, you could also look at it like this. Well, let's look at it this way. So you didn't punch them in the face. You said, well, let's, what about this idea?
Yeah.
You know? One of the things they taught us in our training was that you never want to discourage students.
No.
You always want to encourage them. So let's say they ask a question and it's not really a good question. It reflects a misunderstanding. You don't want to say, that's a bad question. And one of the things they did, which was very interesting, is someone asked a question, or they said, if somebody asks a question about something you just explained, and you know everybody's heard it, you say, you don't say, I just explained that, why are you asking? You say, can anybody answer this question? So then you all raise your hand. Let's say you ask the question. So like five of them raise their hand, they say, well, just pick somebody and ask them. So I guess we did a hypothetical situation. So one person answered the question wrong. And all he said, that's an interesting answer. Can anyone else answer the question? Then somebody answered it right. And then he said, this is how you end it. He said, let's give him a hand, great question, great answers. So everybody applauded. So it was all positive. But we got the right answer. Without confronting either a bad question or a bad answer. So he said that in education, you want to encourage participation, and if you tell people your answer's wrong, or that was a stupid question, then other students will close up And people won't feel warm and comfortable there. So, I mean, the main thing is you want to get people to join the community, be part of this community. And community means friendship, affection. It doesn't mean arguing. You know, so, you know, yeah, they say something that's wrong. You say, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. You know, I understand why you could believe that. But Krishna explains it this way. So, you know, consider this also. You know.
Yeah, I was teaching my first DYS class, first day, and Balram Lila was in the class, and there was, I was going on, and I was like, human form of life, you're more intelligent than any animal. And then this person said, dolphins are as intelligent as humans. Scientists have found. Then he, fortunately, was there, so he said, okay, we grant you that dolphins are as intelligent as humans, but you agree humans are at least as dolphins.
But I haven't seen any dolphins at the Bhagavad Gita class. I have my doubts they're as intelligent.
Humans discovered that dolphins are as intelligent as humans. Dolphins discovered that humans are as intelligent as humans.
It was not an argument, but he kept saying, you know, how can you necessarily know they are not? I mean, you're not in their... So then I said, at least we are equal.
I would say there's a lot of stupid humans out there. So, you know,
I said maybe they are, you know, but at least let's talk about humans. So then he was like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah, sometimes.
You know, in one sense, it doesn't matter whether they are, okay, they are. That's fine. Let's talk about humans.
I think there's, yeah, this is a really good point.
He was so happy with that.
Like you come in with this paradigm of defeat. We have to, you know, the goal is to defeat. No, the goal is to make people devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have to say that, just because it's the first day, to make sure the guy comes, which he's going to forget anyway, and by the eighth week he's going to understand that humans are smarter. They can understand themselves as spiritual beings. So what's the point of defeating them? It's just ego. So you have to be coming from that position of just, we want to welcome everybody. And the people will feel it, and then they'll stop. A lot of people will not challenge it if they feel that warmth. It's not the mood.
Right? They're actually looking for the warmth.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for.
And also, I explained last time that I always look for ways to teach difficult points. If I know there's going to be some resistance to something, I'd rather teach it through an exercise in which they come up with a conclusion that I want to teach. Because I'm afraid if I tell them, there's always going to be people who won't agree. So if I can do it without saying it, and everybody comes up with a conclusion, then it's better.
Yeah.
So again, you have to think, well, how could I...
Yeah.
How could I do this? And then when they come up with the right conclusion, then you can talk about it and there's no defense because they already agreed on it. Right? But, you know, those are the kind of things that you need to discover. And when you discover it amongst yourselves, then you can use it. You say, this is the way, this exercise is how we teach this point. And you'll see, it always works. Everybody gets it. So then you made it easy for everybody. Right? Yes? Good? Happy? I mean, what I'm saying is, I did this training with the most successful seminar training company in Canada. It's probably like number two in America. We're talking about high level professionals. Just incredibly good. Everything they did. There was nothing they did that wasn't just wow. And everything they taught, there was an exercise. They never lectured on anything that wasn't connected with doing something. And all the exercises were very deep. And it was very fun. And if they ever, this is another nice point, because these workshops that they teach are very self-development oriented, and sometimes in self-development workshops, people need to be challenged a little bit about their own issues that are preventing them from being successful. But what they did when they saw, what they did when they saw that a person, you could tell sometimes by a person's questions or comments they had some issue and it needed to be addressed, they would ask for permission. So, would you mind? I could say something about this, but I just don't know if it's okay. You know. So I think maybe you've misunderstood it this way, or maybe it's something about yourself and your approach. Would it be all right? So they ask permission. You know. They say, I think you're actually making an excuse and you could do it, but you have a nature to kind of hide behind it. That's just the impression I get. I mean, just think about it, you know. So you just stand back and say, just think about it. It's just something that came to me, and I don't mean to offend you or anything. And usually they go, okay. And if it's true, all the better, because they'll appreciate it. So you can, you know. Or you can do, you know, they say something and say, well, there's another way of thinking. Could I tell you? Would you be open to that? So you open them up by just asking them if it's okay. Instead of, no.
You say it like, it happened to my friend, or it happened with someone else, tell them giving directly, would that be lying or cheating?
No. Not necessarily. But you can say things like, I noticed that people do this or think this way, and but they, it results in this. Like, I don't know if any of you can relate to that, if any of them, that's happened to any of you. It's always very gentle. And you'll get mileage. You have 8 weeks. You want to get heavy at the 8th week. But they'll be ready for it by then. Okay? So tomorrow we should, what's the objective tomorrow? We want to look at objectives for your courses.
That's one of the ideas I had. Maybe we can share. What I was thinking.
You know what I would.
Some of the things we could actually do.
Yeah.
Something. It goes some of the things that you said. Okay. What are the objectives of our course?
Right.
And maybe other things you could tell us that we could. How are we? What are the different things we are doing to try to accomplish it? Then look at some of your principles and see how you are applying that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Maybe we can.
Definitely the aims is very important.
Yeah.
And you can have
the aim itself is very important, at least for Bhakti, Bhagavad, DYS and Bhakti Vita. We could do that. And then we could also think of other seminars that we could do, which is happening right now. But I think taking input from everybody, people have good experience now. Like Maharaj Mandur is teaching for a few years, the same course. Some of us are teaching for a few years, some are teaching for a few months or a year or so. I'm sure people can come up with some things. We can clearly define maybe what is the objective as well. Maybe we have to think about what are the few questions that we need to answer.
Everybody can think about it. And I, you know, consider that idea of developing a workbook where you're just going through it. There's information, there's exercise, there's realization.
Our emphasis today is about coming up with exercises, right?
Aims.
So
aims and way of the teaching.
So can we take one problem and how we come up with
exercise?
So how
we could share some of it, the principles that Prabhuji taught.
Yeah.
We did it in a couple of DYS sessions and we did some exercises. And we got very positive input out of that. So we could share some of those exercises. And then we could get ideas for more. We could also do exercises, okay, some in Bhakti Gita courses also. You know, we could see, okay, there
could
be some exercises we could do or whatever. Certain things we can come up with.
One of the things you probably should do is ask all the people from now on what do they want to get out of the course. So you get an idea of why people, what are people's expectations so that you can address those. Because they might be the ones who really, I mean, they won't know everything, but at least you can see. you know, want to spiritualize our home.
Yeah.
Do you even address that in your book,
yeah.
in your course? Well, no,
yeah.
if we don't, we better.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
he was talking about these professional seminars. I actually went to one of them. One of the things that they did was on the last day, they said, if you really like this seminar, can you get two or three of your friends and family members to come?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is the input for them, I mean, for the next class.
Yeah. So some of these things we could, you know, there are certain simple things we could introduce.
You know, in some of those seminars, what they'll do is say, could you write down right now on a piece of paper which friends of yours would be interested in this? And sometimes they'll turn that in and they'll say, the company will write down and say, your friend told us. Of course, they can ask them also, but... they're also giving discounts for doing that, for bringing people, right? Yeah.
All right. So, obviously, strongly encourage everybody to come.